we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Litchfield Mercury read by Neil Sleat.
A driver pulled over doing 94 miles per hour on the M6 told officers he was late for his speed awareness course.
And our thanks to Simon Turner for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and journalist Samira Ahmed. And opposite them on my left, Susan Kalman and Phil Jupiters. Susan, have a listen to this. I saw my problems and I see the light. We got a loving thing, we gotta feed it right. There ain't no danger, we can go too far. We start believing now that we can be who we are. Peace is the word. Susan, who should beware Germans not bearing gifts?
This is a story about Greece. If you've been following the news, you'll know there's a financial issue with Greece. I was watching the news the other day, and the commentator said, Greece are about to run out of money. And it was quite offhand. It was like, you know, your pal Brenda, who's overspent on her credit card. Oh, Greece are about to run out. Oh, never mind, eh? And they're going to run out of money at the end of the month because the rescue package from Europe runs out at that point. And there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing just now. It's quite a fluid situation, I think they would say. So, the Greek Prime Minister, who was elected fairly recently on an anti-austerity platform, they want to spend their way out of austerity in simplistic terms. And they went to the European Commission, to President Juncker, and said, Juncker, how do you pronounce that?
Go with it. I like everything you're saying. The way you say anti-austerity makes it sound like a relative who gives you a really mean birthday present.
So, so President Juncker, they sent a letter saying, basically, look, we know we're in a bit of bother. Can we have another 6 months and then we'll have a chat? And President Juncker said...
Do you think the clue was they sent a letter with no stamp on it saying to be paid by a recipient?
And President Juncker said, that sounds a really good idea, actually. And everyone went, oh, that sounds really brilliant, doesn't it? And everyone was like, oh, maybe there's going to be a solution to this. Aye, that's good. And then, da-da-da! Who arrived? Angela Merkel. And Berlin said, no, you're no having that. That's exactly what she said. No, you're no having that. And Greece is like, but we need to do it. And Juncker went, oh, no, mum's spoken.
Well, it's better than listening to Robert Peston having you do this for us. Because, of course, the real fear that is that Greece could leave the Eurozone. And, I mean, if that happens, what?
Well, what I would say is that Europe is a very fluid thing just now. I don't know if you read this in newspapers, that Australia will be in a Eurovision Song Contest special. Now, no, listen, I think there is a line, and I think that line has just been crossed.
Yes,
never mind
it's
Greece.
It's called the Equator.
I wouldn't mind if it was Kylie or Danny doing it, but it's not. It's just going to be someone from Australia. And I think that's ruining what Europe always has been to me, certainly, Phil.
Absolutely.
I don't know about to you.
Yeah, no, that is ruining the spirit of a marvellous annual cultural event.
I think that Greece should go back to the drachma. I've got so much old holiday money lying about the house, I would instantly become one of the wealthiest citizens of Greece.
Well, if they did, then they can just print as many drachma as they want and start from scratch. Because money is all... It's not a real thing, is it? It doesn't have any intrinsic value. And banks create money all the time just by giving loans on the basis they haven't got gold in there. Go down your local TSB and say, would you mind opening the vaults? They haven't got anything in there. Money is all made up. So all Greece needs to do is make some drachmas out of... They don't even have to print them. They could just make them out of bits of aubergine if they wanted to. So I could just say Moussaka is the currency.
How do you say this? How do you say this, darling? Is it Syriza?
Syriza?
Syriza.
Syriza. It's lovely. It's made with mint yogurt. A little bit of ground lamb. Mainly aubergines, let's be honest.
Greece's request for a six-month extension on the Eurozone bailout has been rejected by Germany. Greece is currently ruled by Syriza, who were elected last month after vowing to end austerity. Syriza is a coalition of left-wing and radical parties, just like our government, but left-wing and radical and elected. The European Commission delivered an uncompromising message to Greece that it would have to stick to an austerity course, and to rub it in, we'll be delivering the cash to Athens in a giant wooden horse.
2 points to Susan. Jeremy, who's let their letter writing get a bit holier than thou?
The bishops. Mm. I'm quite fond of the C of E because I suppose I'm a secular Anglican. I mean, when you're C of E, you can't really say you're lapsed. I mean, what would be the point? You know? The Church of England, you don't lose your faith. You just can't remember where you left it. But the C of E's done a report. It's in the run-up to the election, telling us the sort of questions we should be asking our candidates. And it advocates a sort of middle way between socialism and capitalism. It's not a new idea. It's also advocated by Tony Blair and Mussolini. But it's full of nice stuff, and it's called Who Is My Neighbour? Now, in the case of Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who lives at Lambeth Palace, his neighbours are St Thomas's Hospital and Al Jazeera, and some posh flats on the roundabout. But it's, of course, Who Is My Neighbour? Is a direct quote from Luke 10, parable of the Good Samaritan, in which a man is basically mugged, slapped around, his clothes are nicked and everything, he's left by the... And a priest walks by on the other side, a Levite walks by on the other side, and then a Samaritan helps the man and pours oil and wine on his wounds. Not the kind of dressing the man was looking for, in honesty, but the point is that the man who was not of his tribe helped him, and this is what Jesus tells us, and this is what the church tells us, that we should, you know, our neighbours are everybody, including the other. And of course, the right-wing press have gone ballistic about this, calling it a load of lefty tripe and saying, well, the poor aren't going to grind their own noses into the dirt, so who's going to do it? It'll have to be us, won't it? And so they've been hit with a huge storm of abuse from the right-wing newspapers for basically saying, can't we all just be nice to each other in the way that we are in the C of E? Perhaps the world's problems could be solved by a large thermometer on the outside of the church and a tombola. Perhaps if we all made our own lemon curd for the raffle, the world would be a happier place.
What do like C of E vicars and bishops do when they're not being vicars and bishops? Because I get the feeling it's a territorial religion.
Do you?
It is one of those, they kind of do it at weekends. I get the Archbishop of Canterbury at the minute, it looks like he's an accountant.
Yeah. He's an oil man, but oil man sounds rather glamorous. It sounds like he should be wearing cowboy boots and a big hat. But
yeah.
One of the reasons they wanted to get involved, the Church of England, was to counteract the sex appeal of Russell Brand.
Yes.
Thank you to the Church of England for throwing cold water over my heaving bosom every time I see Russell Brand on the television. I'm not one to talk about anyone else's sex appeal, but I think it's fair to say that we don't need any help necessarily. Some of us don't need any help, all of us. I have never once voted in an election based on the sex appeal involved in any of the candidates. I've never.
Harold Wilson.
No. It's not like you. I mean, what is it? What would you have? Oh, Nick Clegg, he loves compromise. You know, you don't do that.
Yeah, but do you think maybe the whole Russell Brand thing was because they were a bit jealous? I mean, they've also got that long-haired, bearded man who's always telling people what to do. I just want to.
It was just. I think their point was that Russell Brand, he's a very charismatic fellow that knows a lot of words. They're concerned that young people will listen to Russell Brand and therefore not vote. And there is an issue with younger generations not voting. And I'm sure what really will get them voting is a bishop telling them what to do. I think that's a plan that can't fail, to be honest.
It was interesting that they've come out with this, which I thought was a very interesting, it was long, the minute a woman has become a bishop. I think she's got them together. Do you not think she's got them together and gone, now, come on, boys, let's at least formulate some thoughts for ourselves here.
Yeah, any minute, sweet. I'll put a kettle on, we'll talk about it later. the thing is, this is kind of reactive kind of political world we live in now, where that can happen is Russell can make a couple of tweets and say, don't vote. And their reaction is, oh, we must address this Russell Brand issue and get the people to vote. How about doing that rather than confronting the Russell Brand issue? How about policies they would give a toss about? Any chance? I doubt it somehow.
You have to give credit to the C of E, because the Catholic bishops would never have sent a letter encouraging people to get more involved in politics, would they? I mean, I think they prefer it if you pull out at the last minute, but...
Ladies and gentlemen, sorry, there are a few old Now Show jokes hanging about, and they will be done.
They did say in the essential manifesto that they had, that it was something that we needed moral revision or a new moral direction in the country, and that they were trying to help us on the way. And I think feeding down to the people they're trying to reach, which is what they're saying is the young people, a 55-page manifesto from the Church of England, really, you know, it needs to be a tweet. There just needs to be one tweet saying, love your bros. Hashtag yep. God.
That's
and
it.
That'll probably that'll
this,
do
this
it,
is a
it?
Bit like a vicar in a youth club saying, in a way, Jesus was a bit of a rock and roller himself.
Yes. That's exactly why that. I hate Thought for the Day. It's always like, I was driving down the motorway and I was in the middle lane. I thought the middle lane's a bit like Jesus. And you think, no, it isn't. Shut up. I accidentally switched on the radio when Thought for the Day was on for the first time. And I thought it was an emergency broadcast. I thought there was like a nuclear attack and this was the voice we would hear trying to reassure us. Everybody gets lonely at some time. Oh, my God! The Russians have finally got us!
In this post-apocalyptic world, many of us will be thinking of hunting down our neighbours and eating them.
The bishops of the Church of England have published a joint open letter encouraging people to vote while warning that our democracy is failing and attacking the growing appetite to exploit grievances and find scapegoats in society. The letter was written by the House of Bishops, which is a bit like the House of Fraser, except they only sell one kind of dress. We should halt and reverse the accumulation of power and wealth in fewer and fewer hands, urged the bishops from their palaces. The letter was 56 pages long, although the last three were mainly notices about coffee mornings. To say, Archbishop Welby is fast becoming my favourite bishop, after Harold. Right. 2 points to Jeremy. Samira, who has telegraphed both their disappointment and their notice?
This is Peter Oborne, who's the veteran, very principled journalist at the Telegraph, I think about 20 years, who's resigned from the paper over a couple of things. One of them is that the paper failed to cover the HSBC Swiss banking tax evasion scandal because it was a major advertiser. But more importantly, they were making fundamental errors in kind of basic facts that Telegraph readers would know, like they confused the Earl of Wessex and they, you know, they just got his title wrong and they called him kind of the Muggle Overlord of Narnia and just things like that. Peter Oborne did. He did a documentary many years ago. You know, he was running the Conservative Party, and he looked at that famous photograph of the Bullingdon Club, you know, with Osborne and Cameron and Boris Johnson in it. And as a result, that photo has been withdrawn in that you can't publish it anywhere.
Is that right? It's just banned.
Gilman and Soane, the publisher, said for commercial reasons it was unavailable anymore, and you're not allowed to reproduce it, and you're not allowed to see it. And it was quite interesting that he went after it. But the most fascinating aspect of this whole story of his resignation is he said, you know, they've been sacking journalists, they've been sacking subs, and then the Telegraph said, we utterly refute his claims, which is the incorrect use of the word refute.
Exactly. They meant reject, didn't they? Oh, it's unforgivable. Unforgivable.
But some more stories have been coming out from ex-Telegraph journalists or Telegraph journalists just now, and I think one of them was they came under pressure to raise the rating of Despicable Me 2 from a 2-star to a 3-star.
And coincidentally, Despicable Me is also the autobiographical title of HSBC's tax advisor.
At this stage in the game, the Daily Telegraph is ostensibly an Argos catalogue with a crossword at the back.
On the subject of tax avoidance,
yes.
I've come up with a very clever tax avoidance scheme, which is that all my broadcast work is on radio. Because what I found out is that the people who do the same job for the BBC but on television, some of them are paying tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds in tax solely for the reason that the BBC pays them vastly more than we do, just because they wear a bit of foundation.
Obviously, here on the BBC, we don't have advertising. We are free from any influence. But can I just say, I think everybody should start their day with Danish bacon. Just saying. Peter Oborne, chief political commentator for the Daily Telegraph, has resigned, claiming that the paper was suppressing negative stories about HSBC, who are a major source of their advertising revenue. Oborne claimed a former Telegraph executive told him HSBC was the advertiser you literally cannot afford to offend, which isn't quite as snappy as the bank that likes to say yes. The Telegraph, or to give it its official title, HSBC News, denied they were influenced by advertising, saying we utterly refute any allegation to the contrary, before posing the question, are you paying too much for your car insurance? Oborne said newspapers had a constitutional duty to tell readers the truth, sending a wave of confusion around the offices of the Daily Mail. 2 points to Samira. Phil, why does claiming benefits from 18 to 21 mean working 9 to 5?
Yeah, the Prime Minister this week, Mr. Cameroon, a big African sponsorship deal, can't go into it now. He announced that he thought it would be a good idea that teenagers basically do 30 hours of community service for a week for their benefits. What I quite like about the current administration is they've turned life on this delightful little island out on the western edge of Europe into a Dickensian nightmare of incredible scope.
The Prime Minister's a big fan of Morrissey, and I was doing a feature for the BBC about this whole issue of pop stars and living on benefit. And Morrissey, of course, spent years on benefit, finding his voice before becoming a star. And yet at the same time, it's hard to imagine any politician would say, well, we should just let them all hang around at home in case one of them becomes Morrissey.
Well, one of the strange things he said was, he said there were two reasons he wanted this to happen. First of all, young people would get up early and discover what it was like to get up early and do a job. Well, make them breakfast TV presenters. Just do that. Put them on the telly, then they're getting up early. Secondly, he said something extraordinary, like, everyone in the country will be able to then find their God-given talents, or no one's God-given talents will go to waste with this. What if your God-given talent is sitting eating pot noodle? What if that is, because I was great at that. I was amazing at eating pot noodles. I used to combine the flavours. I used to create what I think is culinary delicacies. I used to play online gaming. I made a lot of friends in Belgium.
I've only ever signed on once. I've been out of work many times. I only signed on once years ago. I was about 23. And I didn't like it, so I went along to the local old people's home and asked if I could volunteer, because I felt I wanted to do something for the money. So they said, well, could you transport people backwards and forwards to the...
What, in time?
Yeah. I am the doctor. So I borrowed my mother's car, and it was to take them to a daycare centre. And the very first person that I took, I thought it was safer to put them in the back of the car. I treated them rather like a child. I put them in the back of the car, and it was a rather large old man, and there was no back door. And I flipped the seat forward and tried to pull him, and he got stuck in the well between the back seat and the front seat, and in the end was extracted by an entire ambulance crew, had to come out. And I was never asked again.
He also said that people who are obese, too obese to work, have their benefits taken off them unless they go on a programme to lose weight. So you'll be judged when you go to get your benefits. They'll count your chins and you'll have to lose them one by one. And when you're finally completely chinless, you can get a post in Cabinet.
David Cameron has set out new welfare plans, which mean tens of thousands of jobless teenagers will be barred from claiming benefits from day one unless they agree to carry out 30 hours of community work per week. What these young people need is work experience and the order and discipline of turning up for work each day, said Cameron from his holiday home in Cornwall. Jobs proposed for young unemployed people include tidying up a local park, cleaning war memorials, and marrying Stephen Fry.
News quiz right there. Whammo!
Wait, I've got another one. Youngsters who make no effort to find employment have been given many names over the years, such as scroungers, layabouts, and Princess Beatrice of York. Also under Tory plans, people who cannot work because they are obese or have alcohol dependency will be sent straight to the House of Lords. Government got me into this situation. I have no work and no prospects. Why am I being punished? Said the Deputy Prime Minister. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Samira have got 4 points, but Susan and Phil are in the lead with 5. And we start round two with the following Channel 4 TV listings from the 16th of February.
9 p.m, UKIP, the first 100 days. 10:05 p.m, catastrophe.
Thanks to everyone who sent us that. Jeremy, who's putting in a bid to end your day in court?
Oh, somebody's done a report. The University of Justice has done a survey saying that it should all go online. Any civil case involving sum of money less than £25,000, you should just fight it out on Twitter. What you do is you're in a dispute with your insurance company, or you've got an accident claiming with your employer, and you just round up all your followers on Twitter, and both sides abuse each other until one gives in and pays up. And they're saying, what we'll do is we'll put courts online and it'll be like, you know, Minecraft, but with justice. It'll be great. And they're saying it's to improve access. Yeah, come on, it's all about saving money. It's nothing about improving access. So basically, they're just going to bung it all online. And you go online and there'll be an online judge who'll just be... How will you even know it's a real judge?
How will it work, though? I mean...
It won't.
So, I mean... Lawyers, they do all that thing and they shout objection. What do? You upload a sad face.
I was just surprised that they thought you could do it online because, you know, it'd be through webcam or something. When we all know that you're busy typing or looking at something else and not really paying attention. And I once covered the appeal of the Millennium Dome diamond robbers. Remember that gang who robbed it? And they brought an appeal on the basis that the judge had fallen asleep in court during their trial. Mm. And that was like with everyone in the room noticing. Mm-hmm. But you just thought on a webcam, you wouldn't even know if he was
there. Are some worse things that can happen on a webcam, I'm telling you. Than him falling asleep. But you'll wish he'd fallen asleep.
Just because someone on a webcam is wearing a wig and wants to punish you, that doesn't mean they work for the justice system.
I like the idea that... Well, Mr. Jackson, thank you for appealing here online. We find you... buffering.
I think one of the worrying parts of this, though, is that they're not even talking about having judges involved in it. That's one of the problems with this. Now, first of all, it wouldn't work for me because I permanently block my camera on my laptop.
How do you do that?
Well, I've stuck a gold star over my own gun anyway. So I stuck a gold star because I'm always a star. That's what my mum says. So I stuck a star over the camera so that, because people can switch on your camera without you knowing. And
what are you doing?
Nothing. What's happening is sometimes I'm self-employed. And naked. And
we know.
I don't like the idea that when I'm doing my admin that there's...
Darling, you live in Scotland. It is never warm. Is this a sensible...
But do you know, the strange thing is I sit there and I've covered up my camera. I'm completely naked going, oh, I hope no one's switched it on. Do you know, I've got no curtains. Like, oh, hope no one's looking at me online. Hello, everybody. I'm completely naked. Anyway.
I see Susan's doing some admin. Seems to have lost a couple of pounds as well.
The point is, they're talking about not having judges and just having arbiters. Now, they say, oh, it's only for a small amount of money. Oh, eBay does it fine. eBay's where drunk people buy signed photographs of Juliet Bravo.
Talk about it being like eBay, and in fact, you would even have a feedback process.
Yeah.
So, but how's that going to work? Are you going to have, like, TripAdvisor for prisons? Is that going to be the next thing? My room was very small. I got shanked in the dinner queue. I mean, we're...
With your prison. Did you just say shanked?
Yes, is that not the correct... Is that not the correct term?
I'm sorry, it's just like hearing you suddenly leap into a Dizzy Rascal number. It's just very unexpected.
I passed some graffiti the other day, and I had to look it up. Do you know what this means? If it ain't racked, it ain't graff. Never even occurred to me. If it ain't racked, if it isn't stolen, if the paint that you made the graffiti with isn't stolen, then it doesn't count as real graffiti. And of course, it occurred to me that you must... I always thought you might go to B&Q and think, well, I'll have a bit of black and a little bit of red.
But do you know, that is so completely meta.
Is it? Well, I don't even know what that means.
The fundamental point is that you have to turn up and you have to know who it is that's turning up, and it has to be the right person that turns up in court and not a series of emails from whoever it could be. So everybody, if the justice system is to work, should be entitled to their opportunity to face the person they're accusing or defend themselves in front of a judge in a court. And just to save some paper is not enough. Most of the cases are small claims cases, that there's a lot of them.
Also, this would never work if your claim's about a stolen computer. A report into the legal system has called for a new branch of the court system to be set up online and for it to be based on eBay's system for resolving disputes. The Telegraph reported that cases could be settled more quickly by judges sitting in front of a computer using papers received by email. Or email, as the rest of us call it. Lord Dyson, the master of the rolls, has backed the report. Well, backed it. He liked it on Facebook. I love that master of the rolls. Doesn't it sound like he should be managing a branch of Greggs? I think that's fantastic. I like that a lot. 2 points to Jeremy. Samira, have a listen to this. Take a look at the law, man. Reading up the wrong guy. Oh, man. Wonder if he'll ever know. Who's in the best-selling? Samira, is there life on Mars and who wants to live there anyway?
Well, there's a short list that's been drawn up of 100 people out of the hundreds of thousands who applied to go. And I think 5 Britons are among them, including some teenagers, actually, which would be interesting. Mm. But the idea is, in theory, if they ever find a space rocket that could actually go, and they haven't got one yet, they're going to attempt to establish a colony in 2024 and send people there, and then send another 4 people every couple of years to kind of boost the numbers. And there's going to be a reality TV show, of course, of it all, filmed by Endemol. No, that's really true. And the thing is...
Endemol being quite a good name when you think about it.
But the only film I've ever really seen that I enjoyed about Mars was, you know, Total Recall.
Yeah.
And I think I remembered about it was, like, because of the radiation, like, the women grow 3 boobs. And then I thought, oh, no, is that a story in the Daily Telegraph?
ITV2 went through a phase of showing Total Recall. Every day it appeared. And for some reason, I was in a house that only had ITV2. And I know it off by heart, and I used to perform it. So, Total Recall...
See, you'd be like... I'm sorry, I don't want to in any way diss the people who've been selected, right? But some of the people who've been selected, you'd be one of those people that you'd find yourself... There's 4 of you going to Mars, and you find yourself sitting next to the person who goes, I know the whole of Total Recall. There's a guy, Ryan McDonald, right? He's one of the... He's an Oxford physicist.
Oh, he's sweet.
Yeah, he can recall pi up to 90 digits. Can you imagine sitting next to him for 180 days to Mars?
But the lesson of Total Recall is that you don't need a man that can recall pi up to how many digits. When you get there, you need ex-army officers, you need people who know how to kill things, because Mars is not a nice place at all. We know that from the films we've seen, which are... which are entirely based on scientific knowledge. So, if Total Recall has taught us nothing,
yes. It
is that the people that should go are not these very nice, I'm sure they are,
sciencey
boffins. It's Ross Kemp. It's people like that.
I'm happy for Ross Kemp to go to Mars. Sense the colony, as soon as they get there, one of the plans is they're going to set up solar panels as soon as they land in order to power
right
their society.
After they've built the Starbucks.
IKEA first, then Starbucks. So they're going to set up solar panels when they land to power their society. That, ironically, is what we need to do here so that we don't have to go to Mars, is to set up solar panels. I don't understand.
There's a little film on the internet, and there's Ryan. You know, he's a lovely guy, and he's talking about he was raised without a father, and he's had that sense of loss all his life, and he hasn't been able to form very good relationships. And then there was a woman who was a refugee from Iraq who said she'd had to leave her whole family behind, and she said she was incapable of love because of that. Then there was a guy in Mozambique who said that life is so terrible that he'd be better off just dying on Mars. You think, these people need a cuddle. They don't need to be sent to their death.
I know, but dear God, imagine sitting in a capsule with those people.
To me,
people
like that are like relief, I'll be honest with you. I'd be the little ray of sunshine on that trip.
Do you know what? I am not going with you, Jeremy.
That'd be the worst case scenario if it was my dream and I was like, okay, I'm getting to go to Mars, and they just opened up the couch and it was just Jeremy going, and another thing.
We were visiting my dad, who's a very, very old man, who worked as a space scientist. He designed satellites. He designed all this country's weather and communication satellites. In fact, at one time, no, you don't have to clap, it's fine. The weather would have carried on without him. We were visiting my dad, and my partner said, do you know, I'd love to go on that Virgin trip to space. And my dad, who's 88 years old, just said, I can think of cheaper ways of committing suicide.
I just love the idea that your dad's built all these satellites, and then you go up and visit him, and he, Jeremy, I could just ask you to do one thing for me when I do eventually pop off. There's a red button underneath my bed. Simply press it, and then everything will take care of itself.
5 British candidates have made it onto the shortlist of the Mars One project, the plan to send 4 astronauts on a one-way trip to the red planet. The astronauts will be filmed travelling to Mars with food, scientific equipment, and a Geordie voiceover artist to comment on what they're doing. The interview process had to eliminate thousands of applicants, such as one woman who asked, are we there yet, on the way to the testing facility? It's unclear at the moment what the team will do on Mars, although they'll probably divide their activities between work, rest and play. Candidate Ryan McDonald said, everyone will remember the names of the first 4 people on Mars, just as history has immortalised the names of pioneering astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and the other one. 2 points to Samira. Phil, why might playing with your food be the healthy option?
Right. What's happening is some food expert has said, oh, kids don't eat enough vegetables, and it's a terrible thing because, obviously, childhood obesity is a bit of a problem, and what we need to do is we need to train them from a very young age to eat vegetables. And some numbnut has said, I know what we'll do. We will hide vegetables around the house and make a game of it. I'm not joking. And not only that, not only just hide them, but carve them into interesting shapes. If you find the pineapple unicorn, you can have some beans later on. Difficult enough getting them to eat without making a kind of bizarre culinary assault course out of the vegetable. I think, basically, we need to go completely the other way and treat children like foie gras. We need funnels and just vegetables. Just.
I think the most serious part of my life is dinner or lunch or breakfast or second breakfast or supper. Essentially, any of the meal times I take incredibly seriously. I have a niece and a nephew now, and if they're ever sent as a punishment to live with me or stay with me for an hour, and I'm forced to feed them because apparently they need fed at regular times, I have to hide vegetables around my house and then play with them whilst my dinner's getting cold. What's going to happen? It's what happened to me as a child. I was tied to a chair and forced to eat like a penguin until I'd finished. And has it done me any harm, Sandy? Am I a normal person?
Well, I don't think we've got time for this debate, really.
The trouble is this idea that everything has to be a game. It could be argued in evolutionary terms that, of course, nature hid fruit and vegetables in the ground and in bushes and trees, and we evolved in that way. And now everything has to be a game. And it's a nightmare, because what you do, if you've got a one-year-old and you want them to eat vegetables, you make a little face out of green beans and some peas and some sweet corn. You make a face and get them used to eating a face. Then you're surprised when they hit two and they bite a big lump out of your cheek.
Let me give you a little tip. If you put a whole bunch of kale into one smoothie, right, you can easily tip it down the sink without having to eat it at all.
This was the thing I was going to say. I think most parents would say the kids actually tend to leave bits of fruit and vegetables around the house anyway, because they're hiding it from you. I used to pour glasses of milk into the rubber plant, and my sister used to know, and she's trying to tell my mum, and my mum never believed her. It's great. But the rubber plant looked really healthy. It had fantastic shiny leaves.
Yeah, unbelievably high cholesterol for a rubber plant.
On the cholesterol thing, did you see that butter is back? I've always thought butter was... Yes, butter is good for you.
Oh, God, you sound like the most middle-class rapper ever. Butter's back. Yeah, boom.
I'm Danish. It's one of our few exports. I love...
Butter and bisacon in the hizzy. We hitting your arteries. Boom.
The only time butter is not good for you is if you spread it on the staircase. I'm just saying that. A new study published in The Lancet has revealed that playing games with your children's fruit and veg can help improve their diets. Dr. Corina Hawkes recommended slicing up pieces of fruit and vegetables and hiding them around the house for the children to find. A splendid game or a lovely treat for the rats? According to the study, hiding fruit and veg helps combat obesity, the idea being you'll forget where you put it and starve yourself thin. Hiding things does make them more attractive to children. That's why they all love Julian Assange and Shergar.
Children do like to look for stuff.
A good place to hide the fruit and veg is in the loft. You can make room by putting your Christmas decorations in the fridge. Actually, in Denmark, we've been hiding food for years. Our children then put on a jumper and hunt it down over 12 gripping episodes. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Samira have got 8 points, but Susan and Phil are still in the lead with 9.
Fictional points.
Three with the cutting from the Dubai National.
The winners in the first round of the Al Dhafra Camel Beauty Contest have been announced, with some driving away with new 4x4s as prizes.
Now, thanks to Paul Gardner for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, why can we no longer hear the woods for the MP3s?
Apparently, we're so used to sort of mentally screening out all the cacophony of noise that we hear in an urban environment that we can no longer hear nice stuff like birdsong, and just the sound of outside. If you listen to radio, if there's a scene outside in a drama, there's actually there's albums in the BBC record library, and there's a thing called Skyline, which is the sound of outside, which is actually slightly different from... Am I boring you? Slightly different than inside. And we don't hear the beautiful things like but the way the birds sing in twilight or at dawn, because we... And people say, oh, of course, the countryside is where you want to go for peace and quiet. The countryside is worse. The countryside, all you can hear is shotguns, American fighter planes on training missions, and UKIP braying. But it's because we're this sound, this constant din around us, we're just failing to hear all the beauty that is to be heard out
there. Did you hear that? There's that thing about the Russian bombers off the coast of Cornwall.
Mm.
I just in my head had, no, Ukraine, not Utoxeter. So.
It does depend where you are. So I spent 2 weeks living in Soho recently and kept my headphones on at night because I didn't want to hear the natural sounds.
What did you do to distract yourself from the little flaps going up?
Wow, Phil. I think you'll find...
You know, if Radio 4 doesn't pay that well, bit of pin money while you're in Soho.
In a peep show. Yeah, just me and my big pants going, you're right, boys, you're enjoying it.
And one little gold star on the window trying to stop them from looking.
The point was, so Soho, noise all the time, frightening. And then I went to stay in a cottage on an island and I found it utterly terrifying because I could hear everything. And actually, if you're not used to hearing the sounds of nature is a terrifying thing. And I stayed up all night and watched telly because I found nature frightening. I don't know what that is outside. I don't know what that is. It could be a bear.
Where was this island?
You're more likely to get bears in Soho, to be honest with you.
That's true.
Quick, come with me. Got 10 bob. There's a Scottish woman dancing in a room. Give me another 50p, she's doing her admin.
According to research by the US National Park Service, the sound of birdsong and trickling water is being lost to a process of learned deafness as the younger generation instinctively tune out irrelevant or repetitive background noise in what has become known as the Archer's effect. Advice on how to reverse the effect of generational deafness can be found at W... Two points to Jeremy. Susan, who was too Brian-y to join the police?
This is a gorgeous story about Brian the horse. Brian the horse was sent to Thames Valley Police to see whether or not he could be a police horse. And Thames Valley Police said, if he does become a police horse, we'll change his name to something more heroic, like Thor or Odin. And as the British public now do, there was quite a furore from people called Brian who were upset about the slur on the name Brian. Leading to the hashtag I am Brian. The insinuation being that Brian was a perfectly good name for a police horse. I agree. Whenever a riot occurs, I don't believe it's the name of the horse that intimidates protesters. I believe it's the actual horse. I also don't believe the police shout, get them, Brian. So changing the name wouldn't work. Now, this is all a moot point because Brian, the horse, failed to get into Thames Valley Police, sadly, because he was a bit frightened around people.
I think all this was predictable because I know a number of people called Brian and not one of them has any propensity to try and crush protesters.
What if they'd call that horse Brian Blessed? It would have been completely different, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would have been.
Yes!
I'm a horse! Nay!
Sugar!
Get off my back!
I think animals with human names are fun, like cats called Steve, and you just see people talking to them, like if you've got a dog called Dave, and you just go, all right, Dave.
I once took part in the jumping frog competitions that they hold annually in California, and my frog won, and it was called Rosie the Riveter.
Did you ride it bareback or with a saddle?
Yeah. This is Brian the Horse, who has failed to join Thames Valley Police this week and was criticised for having a sissy name. Brian is 6 feet tall and weighs in at exactly 1 tonne, so he's just had his benefits stopped. Brian actually passed the written exam but failed his other tests to join the police force after refusing to sell celebrity phone numbers to News International. The police spokesman said Brian was not suited to life as part of the mounted police force. Well, he looks silly perched on top of another horse. It's ridiculous. His owner, Joanne Samuel, said she was over the moon to get Brian back. Miss Samuel said she fell in love with Brian at first sight before encouraging him to join the police force in a story that's set to become Richard Curtis's weirdest romantic comedy. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
This was sent in by Anne Richards of Hucknall in Nottinghamshire, on sale on Amazon. Historic World War II aircraft flight in a de Havilland Tiger Moth. The flight includes landing and takeoff.
I've no idea who sent this in, but it's possibly one of my favourite ones I've ever read out on the news quiz. It's just kind of weird. It's from the Morning Bulletin. I've sold it too high now. Here we go. This is from the Morning Bulletin. I don't even know where this paper's from, but it just says, correction. There was an error printed in the story titled Pigs Float Down the Dawson on page 11 of yesterday's Morning Bulletin. The story, by reporter Daniel Burden, said more than 30,000 pigs were floating down the Dawson River. What piggery owner Sid Everingham actually said was, it was 30 sows and pigs. Not 30,000 pigs.
Let's take a look at the final score. Susan and Phil have got 13 points, but in a shock result, Jeremy and Samira, this week's winners, with 14. Before we leave you, here is a clarification from the Sentinel newspaper sent in by Tom Kelly in Oregon.
Saturday's story on local musician John Henninger mistakenly reported that Henninger's bandmate, Eric Lydé, was on drugs. The story should have read that Lydé was on drums.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra with Jeremy Hardy, Samira Ahmed, Susan Kalman and Phil Jupitus. In the chair with Sandy Toxic, and the news was read by Menial Sleet. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, Tom Meenan and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Matilda Winneck and Max Davis. The producer was Tamara Shillam.